What's the best way to end off summer?
What's the best way to end summer? Well, traditionally, I would go and play a music festival.
That is so wrong.
Okay, well, the first answer... This is a really hostile interview. This is... Okay, so...
Listen up. There's only one way to end off summer, and that's at the Victory Square Block Party. On September 1st, come bid adieu to the warm weather at the summer's best party. It's fun, it's free, and we want you there. Victory Square Block Party features performances by Kim Mortal, Biawana, Love Goon, Sunrise Social, Sylvia Rath, Lucid, Oblomov, and Tonk. Plus, there'll be tasty food vendors and a raffle with kick butt prizes. That's September 1st from 2 to 9 p.m. See you there.
Well, I always look forward to the fall. I love September. It's my favorite month.
That's not an answer.
LGBTQ.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave. You're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
And we're the Daves. I'm David Bedanek.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
These are the days of our lives.
It is Friday, the 30th of August, 2019, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from our studios underlooking the agora of the palatial Student Nest on the Musqueam territory of Ulksan, better known to you as the Point Break campus of the University of British Columbia. On the program, the Fringe Festival starts next week, so I put out the call to anyone who wanted to talk about their Fringe show to come out to UBC at noon on a Friday, and now the place is crawling with Fringe artists. So we'll do our best over the next hour to let you know what some of the best shows to see during the Fringe Festival. It's Vancouver's award-eligible hour for local independent theater, film, and music. And it starts right now. Don't touch that dial. And let's get stuff started right away. We've got we got three guests sitting across from us. Two of them are from a show called Legoland, and the third is the writer and director of a show called Try to Remember. So, David, let's start with you. Tell us about Try to Remember. You are David Stevens, our David Stevens, the writer and director. Tell us a bit about the show.
Well, if you like to laugh, if you like to cry, and you like to think, this is the show for you.
Okay.
It's a story of a life in search of an end.
Uh-huh.
We know how to bring life into this world, but we don't have a graceful passage for ushering it into the next. So this is what this show is about. It's mm-hmm. a multimedia extravaganza, weaving together comic, dramatic scenes,
yeah.
film, dance, slides. You're not going to know what's coming next. And you're going to be on an emotional roller coaster.
Now, you wrote this show as well.
Yes, I did.
And this is kind of based on your own life experience.
It's my family's struggle with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was your mom?
It was my mom.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give people the experience of what it's like to discover all of a sudden that, you know, that your parent has dementia.
Yeah.
Not only from the point of view of the the child, but also from the point of view of the parent herself. Most people think, oh, you know, I don't remember where I put my keys the other day. Oh, well, I'm just getting old. That's not a big deal, you know. So there were a lot of little things like that, and they got bigger, you know, and bigger and bigger. And, you know, some of them are actually pretty funny. All of a sudden, the dishwasher would overflow with mounds of laundry soap. Or my mother would put microwave something with tinfoil in it, and the microwave would start exploding. So there were experiences like that, and my mother kept saying, oh, it's the cleaning lady that did that. And so finally, I think the major climax was when she flunked her driver's test, but in California, which is where I'm from originally, you take both a written test and then a road test. You don't get to take the road test if you flunk the written one. So she said, well, I didn't flunk the written the road test, so therefore I can still drive my car. And that was a harrowing experience.
Yeah, I imagine so.
A very harrowing experience.
How old were you when all this was going on?
I was in my mid-50s, and my mother was in her late 80s, and my father was in the beginning of his 90s.
Yeah.
So there was quite a group of people here who were not really able to manage their lives at that point. You know,
yeah, and it's tough on you being that age as well, because, you know, like, you're not so much a young man anymore either.
No, and I was working here at UBC as a teacher in the creative writing department, so I could do some long distance work with my students. But if you have a regular job and you have to be somewhere, you're sunk. You're also sunk if you don't have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because this disease kills families.
Absolutely. It drags everybody down.
Right.
And if you can't find the humor, if you can't lighten up a moment or just enjoy what's happening, even though it's horrifying, it will destroy you.
So in the play, although the two actors who are wonderful actors, David C. Jones.
Yeah, very good friend of the show.
And Jackie Minns, consummate actors and wonderful dancers.
Yeah.
So they add a lot to this show.
Oh, lovely.
They're playing my parents, and they have several costume changes. I never make any costume changes because why bother?
Yeah.
My mother had dementia, you know, she wouldn't notice. So...
Yeah, David enjoys his costume changes as well.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. And wait till you see him. He has two scenes in which he has his death dances. The first one is to Singing in the Rain, because that's how he thinks his life is going to end.
Yeah.
And my father actually did decide to take his own life. He thought, my life has been great. I've had a wonderful life. And you know what? I'm just kind of running out of gas, so I think I'll stop taking my diabetes medicine. And he did.
Yeah, just let it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my mother wasn't able to do that.
No.
And this is another really important part of the play, because we have the medical assisted act for dying, which is okay for people who have terminal illnesses like cancer, but not for people with dementia.
Yeah.
Because it presumes you may have changed your mind.
Yeah, that's it. It's got to be your choice.
Right, at the moment.
Yeah, and if you're not able to make that choice.
Because she couldn't speak and make her wishes known. But, you know, people can do that beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the law says, but wait a minute. What if you've changed your mind? You know, and my answer to that is, excuse me. You no longer have a mind to change.
Yeah.
So don't talk to me about changing your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is no way for a person's life to end.
Yeah.
Sitting there, you know, you're incontinent. You can't talk. You can't feed yourself.
Yeah.
And this can go on for
years.
And that's
also why it's really important, you know, to sort of anticipate that and make sure that your wishes are known while you're still able to express them.
Yes.
You know, living wills and power of attorney. And
which is nice, but if you have dementia, good luck.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Before you get into that realm, like, you know, and when we're at our age, when we're still capable of making those kinds of choices.
Right, but you have to, I mean, if if it gets to a point where you've lost the ability to, to communicate,
then it's
you're sunk. I mean, but even if you have prescribed, you know, that you want to be taken off various, well, in most cases with dementia, people are healthy, but their mind.
It's not like they're on life support or anything. It's not like pulling the plug.
So, no, they're not. The medical profession isn't going to end your life because you're otherwise healthy.
Yeah.
Maybe your mind is completely gone, but since your body isn't, that's the major criterion. Mm. And there's no quality of life whatsoever left. And we need to start looking at quality of life as the defining characteristic for when we allow people's lives to end, not their general health and well-being.
Wow. Sounds like a terrific and a great theatrical experience.
It
you
is.
Know, you know, like, and being able to tell that story and sharing it with people, it's I mean, quite an accomplishment for you to bring it to us.
Well, that's why I wanted to use a multimedia approach, because it's so complex and that you can't just attack it from a rational. And I had training and grew up in art performance. So it's really more art performance than it is a play.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a really intriguing show. It's at the PAL Theater, which is in Cole Harbor. And it's part of the Fringe. So you start on the 10th of September. You're not starting the opening weekend, but very soon after. And it's called Try to Remember. And once again, who are the cast?
It's David C. Jones, the inimitable David C. Jones. And Jackie Mintz, another wonderful. You know, both of these performers are teachers at the Vancouver Film School.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not only talented performers there, they're recognized in their profession as mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a handful of fun.
In more ways than one. Well, David, thank you very much for coming in and sharing that story with us. I hope you have a great run.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right. Now let's switch to Legoland. And please introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Ashley Shodat, and I am playing Penny in Legoland.
Mm-hmm. I'm Christian Crucial, and I play Ezra Lam in Legoland.
Okay. Well, tell you what. Let's move David's mic over to Christian.
Oh.
There we go.
Hello.
There you go.
There we go.
And then, Ashley, you can pull yours a little closer to yourself as well.
Perfect.
There,
thank
that's a little bit better. Okay, Ashley, tell us a little bit about the story of Legoland.
Yeah, so Legoland was written by Jacob Richmond about 15 years ago, I want to say.
Around there, yeah.
And Jacob Richmond, he's known for kind of his vaudeville approach to theater. And he wrote Legoland, he wrote Ride the Cyclone, which is a musical that did pretty well.
Yeah, actually, we just went down to Seattle to see it about 6 months ago.
Oh, so. Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what Legoland's about is it's this brother and sister duo, and they're pretty quirky, and the whole show is kind of done in the form of a community service presentation. So you have these two odd kids trying to teach other kids and the world how to be better citizens without really knowing themselves and making a few mistakes along the way.
Or really knowing society. As we know it, you know, as people who've grown up in it, because they very much are detached from that.
Yeah, so, it's like that's an isolated experience of growing up, and all of a sudden, here's the world. What are you going to do about it?
Pretty much.
And so that's where the title comes from as well. I noticed in some of the publicity, like that's Legoland is sort of the image that they were given of the outside world.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Penny and Ezra, growing up, they were homeschooled as well. And they grew up on kind of this hippie pot farm in Saskatchewan.
Way up north. Yeah.
Way up north.
Super detached from everything, you know?
So they were very, very sheltered in a way, and also were raised in a way to believe that everything's really good.
Yeah. I think humanism was kind of the thing that, and a utopia was the kind of idea they were raised in, you know?
That,
Everyone's
the ultimate society communal kind of experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And the show being written in the early 2000s as well, basically the police come, shut down what they realize was the largest organic pot farm in the prairies.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes from there, and the kids are kind of on their own in a way.
Well, yeah, then it follows, they kind of detail their adventures from that point to creating this community service presentation.
Yeah. So it is told in a vaudeville style, so kind of similar to a farce with music.
Yeah, it's a very nonstop show. Like, there's very few moments where, like, you know, both characters are kind of still for a moment, you know?
Yeah.
One kid's at 100% or they're both 100% or something like that. And there's always something going on.
Yeah. And just being in the form of a presentation as well, we are using slides as well, too, to kind of connect the audience to the travels that they go through kind of along the way.
So it's kind of like a TED Talk.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yep, you can say that.
But I think what's really great about the show, too, and that a lot of people can connect with, is it's all about that childish discovery, and it's all about kind of watching it through the eyes of a child. Mm-hmm. There's a nice little bit where the siblings kind of talk about how they went to Walmart for the first time and how Walmart was just this big, amazing thing, and it can't get any better than that, and there's just so much to see there.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's just you could spend a whole lifetime.
Yeah. And it's just the innocence of that we forget.
Well, what's nice about it is what the show presents is this kind of this innocence, you know, this pure worldview that isn't necessarily told to conform or told what it has to believe, you know? Mm-hmm. And they aren't necessarily children by the time they do this show, you know, like they're about 13, 16, so they're like, you know, teenagers, you know, like they finally, like at this point, it's been maybe a year since the pot farm had been shut down, so they finally kind of get what society is about, but there's still that innocence and that, you know, wanting the world to be peaceful and stuff.
They think they kind of get what society is
about.
I got this figured out.
And it's not necessarily cynical or pessimistic.
Yeah. No. It's in fact, it's kind of the opposite. It's,
exactly. Yeah.
It's very well naive, but also kind of that's not the word I'm looking for though. But you know, just.
Well, I think there's a depth to it underneath it. You know, because you can watch it and be like, oh, that's super entertaining and it's really funny. But if you want to and look at it deeper, there's more themes and there's more meaning behind what they say and what's done in the show.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of puppetry as well.
Oh, good.
It's very, very kind of industrial and what you imagine a kid's presentation would be like.
We got sock puppets. We got troll dolls. all kinds of stuff.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. It's kind of the same element, too, where you put on a show with maybe your friend or your sibling and you're like, Mom and Dad, watch this.
Oh,
In the backyard or something, you know, right?
So
we definitely, like, creating the show, we didn't want this stuff to be, like, super, like, professionally done or anything like that. So, like, you know, there's a trash can and there's a puppet theater, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the puppet theater is, like, you know, as DIY as you can get. There's, like, staples and nails and stuff hanging out. And, like,
I've done those.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then all the props that we choose, you know, right? We did not want it to look super, super professional in the way that it was set up. We wanted it to look like it was kids who made it.
Yeah.
And kids who, like, had, like, a day to get everything
exactly,
set up, you know?
Yeah, great. All right, and you're playing at the Cult Historic, right?
Yep.
The Van City Culture Lab.
So the Culture Lab. Okay.
Yeah,
right next door. All right. Which is a nice little room to play in.
Yeah, and we'll be a part of the Dramatic Works series as well.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. All right. Yeah. So it's Legoland at the Culture Historic. Try to remember at the PAL. Thank you all for coming in. Have a great run. Have a great Fringe.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. All right. We got more to come right after this.
Montreal's electropop duo, Milk and Bone, play the Fox Cabaret on August 30th. Tickets are on sale now at eventbrite.com and Red Cat Records. Presented by MRG Concerts, CITR Radio, and Discorder Magazine.
Hey UBC students, love doing arts and crafts or just making things in general? We've got you covered. The AMS Print Club works to bring you crafts from different cultures, backgrounds, and decor styles. We aim to bring about cultural and environmental awareness through the arts and crafts. Check out our Facebook page, Print Arts and Crafts, or email us at printartscraftsclub@gmail.com for more details.
Featuring a wide range of music from India, including popular music from the 1930s to the present.
Rhythms. India.
Alternating Sundays, 8 to 9 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
I need somebody
help,
not just anybody
help.
You know I need someone
help.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable or unsafe walking around campus at night? There's an AMS service dedicated to helping anyone trying to get across campus alone at night. We're SafeWalk and we have your back. Call us at 604-822-5355 to request a transfer, or check out our website at ams.ubc.ca/safewalk for more information on hours and policies.
We are back. We are covering the Fringe for 2019, and we got more Fringe artists with us. Sitting across from me right now is Tamlin Bryson.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Your show called Bedwetter.
Bedwetter, yes.
Yeah. So tell us about that.
So it is the true story of my life about how I wet my bed until I was 15 years old. So it's a part storytelling. I like to describe it as storytelling meets sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very fun show, but then, of course, with some... a few little sad moments, but I always say when I'm pitching the show, like, it's about how I wet my bed till I was in high school, which I know sounds sad, but the show is a comedy.
That's right. Let's take our childhood traumas and turn them into entertainment.
That's what it's all about, right? You got to profit off your pain.
Now, actually, you have been profiting quite well. I noticed in the bio and the lead up or the material on this show, you've won a few awards. You've done the tour and been recognized for it.
Yeah, this show won a Best New Script in Windsor. We've also toured with another show, Indecision, which I won Emerging Artist Award for that mm-hmm. show. Won Spirit of Fringe once. Yeah, so we've been very fortunate to be a part of some really great festivals.
Yeah.
And it was really cool doing this show. One of the most interesting things was the first time we did the show in London, Ontario in 2017, not really knowing how the show was going to be received or how receptive people would be, and people coming up to me afterwards and saying, thank you so much for telling this story.
Right.
There was one point it was a man in like his 60s came up to me and was like, I went through this and I never told anyone, and thank you so much for talking about it. And, you know, we do make jokes, of course, in the show, but one of the things we say with bedwetting is you always hear jokes about bedwetting, but you don't really hear stories.
Mm-hmm.
And in popular culture, especially as we dive into in the show, bedwetting, it's always the butt of the joke. It's always painting a child as a nerd or a loser.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you're going through that. And it's a medical condition that you have absolutely no control over. So trying to break down some of those stigmas and... you know, now I'm the one who gets to make the jokes.
Yeah, exactly. And now you sort of take power and take control over it, because I think at least the perception of it is that a whole idea of power and control, like, oh, you don't have no control at all in your own body, and there's an element of sort of insecurity and fear and
oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's so much stigma surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was my deep dark secret
yeah.
for so long, and
it would affect you in all kinds of ways, I would imagine, socially.
Absolutely. And we talk about in the show, you know, it stopped when I was around 15. So I started going through puberty while I was still experiencing this. I was dating while I was still experiencing this. And one of the things we explore is how do you become a woman while you're still feeling like a child
yeah.
in these ways?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a very... important show to me,
yeah.
but it also is a lot of fun, and I want to stress that I know a lot of people have not experienced bedwetting. I think you will still enjoy the show even without that firsthand experience. Some of the themes can reach a lot larger than just bedwetting itself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we talk about bullying or feeling like you're out of place, feeling like there's a part of yourself you can't share.
And we all have
people.
That.
Absolutely.
We all have that part of us that we keep as a secret and that we don't want anyone else to know about. And in, you
absolutely.
Know, in your case, it comes out as something tangible and physical, but a lot of us, it's just something inside that we don't want anyone else to know about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we cover all those themes with laughter and
good.
With comedy.
Yeah.
I think one of the best ways to make people think and feel is to make them laugh first.
Mm.
So it is a very fun show,
yeah.
But with some nice little poignant yeah. moments.
So where do you come from? Where did you start?
I'm originally from Ottawa, Ontario,
mm-hmm.
and I currently live in Toronto. And then Kyle, who is my artistic partner, so he co-wrote the show with me, and he also directed the show. We met at the University of Windsor, and wrote our first show in Windsor. And now I'm in Toronto and he's in Hamilton, which is just outside.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've been working together for 5 years. This is our fifth year on the Fringe circuit. And yeah, we're very excited. It's our first time in Vancouver.
Oh,
so
great.
I'm very excited to share this story with a whole new group of people.
So where can we see it?
It's at Studio 16.
Mm-hmm.
Our opening night is 10:45 p.m. On September 6th. So if you're a night owl, come on out and have some laughs.
All right, great. Tamlin, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Great. And also in the room is an old friend of the show. I think it's like your third time here, isn't it, Bo?
Third time, yeah.
Yeah, Bo Hanbridge.
Yeah, with you and me. Yeah, how's it going, Dave?
Of Mid-20s Theater.
Yes, yes.
And you have brought who with you?
Janita Thiessen.
Hello, Janita.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in. So you guys are doing two Noah plays by Yukio Mishima. Yeah.
Yes.
I had it written down, and I forgot to open it. This fascinated me because Mishima is somebody that I don't know a lot about, but it's a name that I've heard a lot. I have some friends who are real Japan files, and they kind of revere him as a great poet and a playwright and someone who was also kind of a cultural hero in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I love this. Like, this is like you're like the third, like already when we were waiting outside, we were talking to Ryan, another artist that you will be talking to soon. And he was saying like he's kind of like Mishima. Ironically, he's not as niche as we feel, but that's why we had a sense of like, I think a lot of people do know about him, like because he was also a revered novelist as well. He wrote like tons of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever we talk about Yukio Mishima, there's like, oh, I know that name, but like I don't know of him. And then this is why also because like I personally was a huge fan of Mishima as well, but then when it came to like showcasing these new shows, like as we did last year with Bitter Tears, like if we want to bring in a published play, we want to bring something that is still not really like shown to the mainstream audience, mm-hmm. and really showcase that like these voices that are, even though they've can provide so much, they're still not heard as much, but everybody knows and connects to them. So this is like our opportunity to showcase Mishima and really bring him to light, so people are like, oh my god, yes, like, and then they're almost enlightened and they realize that, oh, like this artist has touched me in ways, or I've heard about him, and now I finally know who this person is. So we can raise the self-awareness and be like, let's tell these really, really good stories.
Done in the format of No.
Yes.
Which is a traditional Japanese theater style tradition.
Yes, but the thing about Mishima as well was these are actually modern no plays. Mm-hmm. Like, he actually took these very classical no tales and he modernized them almost with his own sort of, like, useful, progressive, perspective.
In a really controversial way, too, for the time.
Yeah, it ironically was, like, going...
Well, I mean, that's sort of what Mishima was known for, is being controversial.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And using Japanese tradition to make a comment about the current state of the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for those who aren't aware, who don't know the history, tell us a little bit about No as a theatrical format.
Well, No goes all the way back to
it's medieval almost, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like medieval Japanese theater. Like, I would say like there's a whole like philosophy behind No. I think it's called Kyo, which is like the energy that they use, but it's very, very like movement centric. And like back in the old days, a lot of No plays were actually told very specifically where the actors had to wear the No masks,
mm-hmm.
and they would actually perform their roles of these classical tales with their hands and fans and props and costumes and gestures. Whereas like they would always have a chorus on the side that would actually be saying their lines or singing their lines.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of reminds me of kind of like, well, I guess in Shakespeare, there's like the chorus backgrounds and stuff. But
and in Greek tragedy as well.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
A lot of similar traditions, mm-hmm. all male cast, et cetera.
All male cast, like playing female roles too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the thing about a traditional no, there's over 65 different no masks that would have a different expression.
Wow, I didn't
realize that. Yeah, and like I guess, so like sometimes if the character had to be like somber, they'd use like, I forgot the name of that one, but like there's one called the Ona mm-hmm. mask, which would be like if the man had to play a female role that was known as like, serve the beauty or like the muse that's centered around the tale, then they would wear that specific mask. Okay. And then like if somebody was angry, they would come in with like this, like the demon masks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with
you
the
know
horns.
Right away like who the bad guy is.
Oh
and
yeah,
who you're
yeah,
supposed to be
very recognizable.
For. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Archetypes.
But yeah.
Then like, but then our
yes.
production is not. We don't use no masks the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
we kind of turn it around on its head, where the chorus in Satoba Kamachi is the one. They're the ones wearing the masks.
Exactly, yeah. Which is kind of funny because also in the script that Mishima writes for Satoba Kamachi, that's the first play out of the two, he actually writes, like, for the set, he wants it to, he's like, a very bare minimalist setting, like almost like very poor opera-esque, like black curtain, and which in original no theater, they would be very extravagant on their sets, and they'd have like a specific runway that the actors would have to walk on, and the chorus would be on the side. And so essentially he was very open to just making it like very contemporary, or being like, try to like keep the classic tale, but also like, you know, feel free to like range around it. So we're sort of like trying, hopefully, like obviously because Mishima's passed away, who knows if he would like it. Hopefully he would, and hopefully we're doing him justice. But we're sort of taking a couple liberties to really bring it out to like 2019, 2020, and try to see if we can like even reach more and see how far we can really go with this. Because it does transcend itself. Which is a beauty in and of itself.
Yeah, it's cool that we like you decided to put on the two modern no plays because you took what was modern for his time and modernized it again.
Which is like, I don't know if he would be down for that because, like, ironically, because you know how he passed away, right? And his controversy.
Well, tell me that story.
Okay, well, because he was also like very controversially known as a hardcore right winger. When it came to his politics, right? And then when he killed himself,
giant nationalist.
Yeah.
He was trying to lead a coup or rebellion against the government.
Yes, yeah. And then he committed because like he felt like the old traditional methods.
He formed his own army.
He did, yeah. And like and as a statement, like he committed seppuku because like he felt like the samurai code of honor was like being forgotten in Japan. So as a way, like,
what year did that happen?
Is it 1970? I think 1970. Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's like, so ironically, it doesn't feel that far away, weirdly. Yeah. I don't know, the 70s don't feel that far away to me. But yeah, so like, it was very weird how he would write all these, like, he wrote a lot. Like, I've read a lot of his short stories, like Death in Midsummer and other plays, and like, he really, it's just, he's like a paradox in of himself. And like,
it was only 25 years after the end of the Second World War.
Yes.
So after the defeat by the Americans, 25 years later, you know, like what happened to his country after what could have been their historic triumph, and then they are subdued, and
I think that probably was, well, obviously that was a huge event for the whole country, right? I'm sure a lot of
but that really was how he reacted to it.
Yeah. So it's kind of very interesting as an artist, just because like seeing his artistic work and endorsing, because like deep down the stories that he tells are all very, very, like, they end up being very introspective and personal too. There's so much you can get beyond just like his political beliefs in some of them. I'm very curious. I don't know. Those are the artists that I personally really enjoy though, and I feel like that a lot of them can be polarizing, and you know, sometimes that's probably why they're not shared as much, because people just don't know or what to relate to. But I feel like beyond it, though, like if there's like a universal story that's very truthful and speaks on a level that's beyond our age and our demographic, like we want to endorse that voice.
Well, let's talk about specifically about the two plays that you chose.
Yes. Okay. So, well, in the short stum, like the first one's called Satoba Kamachi, and it's about like a 20-year-old poet who falls in love with a 90-year-old woman. Except the 90-year-old woman warns him that if he calls her beautiful, he will die. So it essentially centers around this. They meet in the park, and then like they kind of go through time. Like she starts telling her story, and then he ends up like enacting like the lover, Captain Fukakusa, who she remembers at this time in this ballroom, and then he sort of like lives the moment again of when she was young, and then suddenly she becomes young, and then the poet, like, well, I guess, do we have to spoil it? Because I feel like people know.
But well, I don't know. Like, yeah, they're both based on like really well-known Japanese fairy tales. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's, you kind of know, you can see the endings coming. Pretty far away.
I've heard this story before.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the first one. And then the second one's called Hanjo, which is about essentially like a young geisha who's waiting for her lover. Except like it's funny because the lover finally arrives, and then when the lover arrives, she doesn't recognize him. So it's just, and then there's also this third character named Jitsuko, who's a spinstress, and she owns her, right? And she's sort of like a motherly figure and I think has like a, but also has like a romantic love for Hanako.
Heavy lesbian undertones.
There's heavy, heavy homosexual undertones.
Tones. In general.
Is that what I think it is?
It's a love, guys. Yes. It's all love.
Yeah.
And there's like a kind of a power play about like what is right for her, for this character when she personally doesn't know what she wants, but she's just waiting because she feels like it's right. Yeah.
The really cool, sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, it's Hayden.
You have to.
You're like my wonderful actress. You're playing, like, you're telling the
stories. Yeah, well, I was going to say, in Hanjo, it's really cool. So we take that, like, traditional thing where it's all men playing these characters, and instead we have an all-female cast. Yeah. Right. So I'm playing the samurai Yoshio.
Wow.
Yes. It's just really cool because I feel like, in a way, just the fact that we have a woman playing this very, like, masculine, classically masculine character, you don't have to say anything. It's just there's already something being said with, like, the casting. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Because,
and, you know, coincidentally, that's going on at the Bart of the Beach right now.
Yeah, because they're
doing Coriolanus with Moya O'Connell playing playing a traditionally male
role. And that seems to be happening a lot more recently, which is, I mean, amazing. Like, right? Sorry, but the guys had the fun.
Guys, step aside. It's the girls' turn.
And there's, like, definitely parallels between the two plays too, like, connections of theme, like we were talking about earlier, just like the themes of waiting and the themes of love and people having strange romances that don't seem like they should work.
And maybe don't. It's like, and so when the audiences do see it, everybody will feel the connection between the two, which is why we decided to do two together, because
can't wait. So that's going on at the Culture Lab.
Yes.
And it's part of the
Dramatic Work series.
Yes, I never remember the right names. It's Two Modern No Plays by Yukio Mishima, and thanks very much for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you again, Dave.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we open September 6th at 9:10 p.m.
So
more night owls, but maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
So go to our show and then go to Bedwetter after.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, triple bill.
That's the fun thing about Fringe too, is you go planning one thing and then all of a sudden you get directed over.
Yeah,
what's this over here?
Yes.
Oh, this could be good. And then you know it's a great night. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Cool.
Montreal's electropop duo Milk and Bone play the Fox Cabaret on August 30th. Tickets are on sale now at Eventbrite.com and Red Cat Records. Presented by MRG Concerts, CITR Radio, and Discorder Magazine.
Hey, UBC students, love doing arts and crafts or just making things in general? We've got you covered. The AMS Print Club works to bring you crafts from different cultures, backgrounds, and decor styles. We aim to bring about cultural and environmental awareness through the arts and crafts. Check out our Facebook page, Print Arts and Crafts, or email us at printartscraftsclub@gmail.com for more details.
Featuring a wide range of music from India, including popular music from the 1930s to the present.
Rhythms, India.
Alternating Sundays, 8 to 9 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
The UBC Women in Science Club provides support for female undergraduates in science fields
Our club has three pillars: mentorship, building community, and connecting people. We offer networking events with alumni, professional development workshops, as well as an ongoing mentorship program to support students through challenges that arise for women pursuing careers in science.
What's the best way to end off summer?
What's the best way to end summer? Well, traditionally I would go and play a music festival.
That is so wrong.
Okay, well, the first answer... This is a really hostile interview. This is... Okay, so...
Listen up. There's only one way to end off summer, and that's at the Victory Square Block Party. On September 1st, come bid adieu to the warm weather at the summer's best party. It's fun, it's free, and we want you there. Victory Square Block Party features performances by Kim Mortal, Biawana, Love Goon, Sunrise Social, Sylvia Rath, Lucid, Oblomov, and Tonk. Plus, there'll be tasty food vendors and a raffle with kick-butt prizes. That's September 1st from 2 to 9 p.m. See you there.
Well, I always look forward to the fall. I love September. It's my favorite month.
That's not an answer.
Okay, we're back, and we've got Ryan Caron here. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, I should turn your mic on. There, that's better.
That might help.
There you are. Hey. Ryan, you're with Geekenders.
Yes.
Which is a local, mostly burlesque, but also you do vaudeville, you do musicals, you do all kinds of cabaret, you do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yes, I call us a pop culture theater company.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably best known for the burlesque Star Wars stuff.
Yes, we like to call it nerdlesque often. we're just actually finishing this week. We're closing our last run of A Nude Hope, which is our flagship Star Wars nerdlesque play. We do lots of variety at the Rio, but we're switching gears slightly for the Fringe in a week. We close on Saturday one show and open the next on Thursday, which is awesome.
Yeah.
For the immersive dance theater piece we're doing this year, Alice in Glitterland.
All right. What's immersive dance?
All right. Well, let's separate those. Immersive theater is one thing, and then dance theater.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the two genres we're playing in. Immersive theater is any kind of theater you can interact with that breaks the fourth wall, that there's so many different ways to do it. Mm-hmm. We've done 7 immersive shows now. They've all been very different how you play. In this one, we have dressed the backstage area, the stage, the hall, this enormous vintage Vegas-y venue, and are inviting the audience to really roam, wander through. It's like a promenade theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a kind of a two-ring circus spectacular happening in the center hall. But the whole story, these 10 performers, 10 dancers, are living out the story of Glitterland through the whole space, on stage, off stage, backstage, in little one-on-one side closets.
This is at the Wise Hall, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
So that's a pretty immersive space as it is.
Yeah. We're really excited to build on like the history and energy of that vintage music space, and inject it with all this glitter and glitz. We're spending about 3 days in there, completely just building the space with curtains and dressing and building a little circus inside. We've got aerial hoops and human-sized martini glass. And it's immersive in that there's a show around the show, and you're in the show and watching the show and all around. And there's a whole range of options on offer. There's an entire show to sit down and watch, or you can follow a character. You can follow the White Rabbit backstage. Help them undress, brush their hair, have a chat about how they're doing, and then watch them go back on stage again. So we're taking all parts of the show, we're making it on stage, and we're making it all available to the audience.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, it's certainly ambitious. It's a big beast of a show, which is one of the big reasons we're so excited to be at the Fringe, because. We are we're taking all sorts of risks on this. A couple of years ago, we did our first fringe immersive piece, Slumber Cure, which was a video game design out in a park, very much free roaming, run around with the fairies from Midsummer Night's Dream. And what we really discovered is the energy and community at the fringe gives so much to these immersive shows, because these shows grow rapidly with their audience. Our actors are so often just as touched by their interactions with the audience as the audience is, because these are novel one-off happenings, honest conversations about deep and intimate and personal themes. And
while the circus is going on.
Exactly, exactly. So we've got this massive spectacle to one side, but then there are moments crafted to help the audience feel seen, to invite you to have a really human connection with this character, and a really unique, one-of-kind experience that is literally based on what you bring to the table in the moments, what you feel and see in that interaction.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys always come up with just wild ideas. And how long? Tell me a little bit about the history of Geekenders. How did that get started?
Well, our founder, Farilith Harvey, she's the writer-director on this project, the founding AD of the company. Last year, she stepped down to focus more on creative, just creative writing.
Right.
So I've been – this is my first season as co-artistic director with Aaron Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just what happens when we let Farilith loose.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful creative force, performs as Trixie Hobbits in the Nerdless scene.
Yeah.
And has been really forging the technique of immersive script writing for 5 years now.
Yeah.
Our script looks nothing like a traditional theater script. It is charts and maps and chronological Excel sheets about 160 pages thick.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been building for 5 years. We started doing sort of fun pop culture events, an evening at Wayne Manor, a Batman-style Halloween, one-night, two-night thing. We've done Harry Potter-themed events. And what we've just taken from those experiences, and the premise here is, well, we've got Alice in Wonderland. Everyone knows this. This is not just pop culture, but this is intrinsic in childhood culture.
Oh, yeah.
So everyone brings something personal to this. We just want to set up a giant playground for you to find and see the adventure that you know is in Wonderland, is in Glitterland. Grab onto your hook of it. And what we found building this process, you know, it's a story about Alice originally.
Yeah.
But we have 10 dancers. We have, and everyone is as fully realized and fleshed out as Alice in this play. The Dormouse is a complete character in a way I've never seen in Wonderland. The March Hare is one of our most fascinating antagonists. And they're each the hero of their own stories. They're each a complete person and journey to follow and connect to and find. And yeah, it really just evolved out of this worked, let's do more of it.
Yeah.
How we got here.
Yeah. Now, as a piece of immersive theater, if I just wanted to sit and watch, that'd be okay too.
100%.
Yeah.
We're something we're excited about in this piece. Past immersive piece, there's been a lot of talking. There's been Shakespearean text.
Yeah.
This time we are putting canned sound, familiar, beautiful, retro pop culture, some niche covers, pulsing through the venue.
Yeah.
And that the show is synced to that. The performers dance in and out of their scenes, dance off stage, and you can sit in them. You can sit in the ball pit. There's a large, human-sized ball pit in the main hall, and watch a three-ring circus.
Yeah.
And the show will come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to create an experience that is fully accessible without walking, exploring. Whether you have any visual or audio limitations, you can, there's lots for you. There's a smorgasbord.
Yeah, you can sort of pick your own experience and be entertained.
We actually have a mask system. So everyone is in the audience is given a mask on arrival. We have a couple of cutout frames for glasses, but contacts are encouraged. And white masks mean play with me.
Okay.
White masks mean the audience, the actors may come up to you and take your hand and ask you for a dance. Right. They may take you backstage to sob about the emotional scene they just had. Meanwhile, red mask means I'm here to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that consent mechanism built in repetitive audience training. Well, it's repetitive to us, but we make it fresh and new. You'll meet a lounge lizard and a guinea pig in the bar who help you learn how to play and practice playing.
Great.
So we've crafted an environment and a full half an hour or so pre-show that is all about getting used to and comfortable in the offers of this space. So every audience member knows how to play, knows how to set their boundaries, knows their boundaries will be respected, and feels safe and invited in this space.
Wow. Sounds like a lot going on. I'm really it sounds like a whole evening's entertainment in an hour. It's just
we've tried very hard to build a show that one could come to again and again if you wanted to and have a completely different experience every time. No two audience members will ever have the same experience in this piece. And there are, you know, it's a 70-minute show set tightly to a soundtrack, but there truly are 700 minutes worth of scripting and content, and then some if you really go hard on the exploring, on the improvising actors in the front. Yeah, there's a lot of choice.
Yeah. Alice in Glitterland, it's at the Wise Hall. What's your opening night?
We open on the 6th through the 14th, dark on Tuesday the 10th.
Yeah.
Unlike most Fringe shows, we are a solid 8 o'clock start every night because we've rented this whole venue out as a bring-your-own venue.
Yeah.
Because there's just no way to load
And you're the only show in that venue, right? So that
gives
you a little bit more control over the space.
Exactly. Yeah. We can't possibly reset the whole world of Glitterland, and we're not joking about the glitter.
Yeah.
We couldn't clean that up every night. So 8 p.m. every night except Tuesday, the festival, and 2 p.m. Saturday matinees, which will be all ages. We have an open bar running through the show. It's a 19-plus evening event. Come check us out right around the corner from the Kulch.
All right. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
Punk rock's premier sisters, Skating Polly, are returning to Vancouver, earning praise from members of X, The Flaming Lips, Babes in Toyland, and more. The grungy three-piece plays September 4th at Lana Luz, joined by local phenomenon Joe Past. Tickets available at rickshawtheater.com and both Red Cat Records locations. See you there.
Australia and Canada both have wide open spaces and wild sounds that fill them. Join your host, Matt, as he shares brand new tunes and archived classics from the independent music worlds of Australia and Canada on Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show. Listen Tuesdays from 11 p.m. to midnight.
Playing your favorite songs for 13 years. The morning what? The morning after whatever you did last night. Live music, local talents, and music you won't hear anywhere else. The Morning After Show, every Tuesday, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
Tune in to Too Dreamy
Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m. on CITR, featuring music from local female and non-binary musicians and some sweet bedroom pop tunes.
Okay, that was a show. special thanks to our guests. If you want to find out more, you want to go see any of the shows that we talked about today, you just go to VancouverFringe.com and in the search for shows box, you type in the shows that we talked about today. Two Modern No Plays by Yukio Mishima, Legoland, Try to Remember, Bedwetter, and Alice in Glitterland. And a special thanks to all of those programmers, all those actors for coming out and talking about it today. Well, that's our show. Thanks for spending your lunch hour with us. Remember, if you have a song that needs airplay, a show that needs audience, an audition that needs actors, a class that needs students, or a film shoot that needs background, we are here for you. Send your details to DaveRadioPodcast@Hotmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram. We're at CITR Dave Radio. If you missed any or all of today's show or want to relive glorious moments from the past, check out our podcast archive at CITR.ca. And remember to subscribe and leave a comment on Apple Podcasts. Stick around. Audrey is up next with Too Dreamy, followed at 2 o'clock by Beppe Crespin Presents. And at 3:30, it's our very own star on the BC Entertainment Walk of Fame, Nardwuar the Human Serviette. We'll have another Fringe preview next week at this very same time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. This summer, take a walking tour of the outdoor art on the UBC campus. Since the late 1940s, works of outdoor art have been collected by the university to enrich the campus environment. Together, these artworks give voice to multiple stories about the history of UBC and Vancouver, and are part of an ever-evolving narrative about art, space, and place, and our own sense of ourselves. There's guided tours featuring highlights of the collection. They vary in length from 1 to 1.5 hours. You can also enjoy a self-guided tour at your own pace. Download the Outdoor Art Tour Book or pick up a copy at the gallery. Suggested routes take about 20 minutes to walk, while a full tour takes about 3 hours. To find out more, or to book a tour, go to belkin.ubc.ca and search for Outdoor Art Tours.
Montreal's electropop duo, Milk and Bone, play the Fox Cabaret on August 30th. Tickets are on sale now at eventbrite.com and Red Cat Records. Presented by MRG Concerts, CITR Radio, and Discorder Magazine.